across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. And I've got to tell you, I'm recording this on a sultry evening that feels like something from June in the deep south of the USA. I almost expect to hear like lines from Tennessee Williams appearing in my head. It is very hot and close and very sticky. One of the things that has happened in the UK, quite often over the last few years, we've come really quickly out of spring and we've been thrown headlong into a humid summer. And even though the temperature at the moment is not really that hot, it's low 70s Fahrenheit, 23 maybe centigrade, it's humid with it. And that makes it really hard. And the heat and humidity lingers in my little apartment. But I'm dealing with it. Let's put it that way. Thank you very much for all of your emails. Please know, as ever, I'm getting more emails than I've ever had on The Unexplained, which is wonderful. Thank you for them from every part of the world. I get to see every email. And if your email requires me to do something, then I will do it, like reply. But if you don't get a reply from me, please remind me after a little while. I'm absolutely snowed under at the moment, which is a nice situation to be in. And thank you so much for all of your support through these difficult times, one way and another. Now, what else have I got to do? Thank you very much to Adam for his hard work on getting shows out to you and for maintaining the website, theunexplained.tv, and also my Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. One of the things that we have discussed recently on my social media is the future of The Unexplained radio show. And all I can tell you here is that as far as I am aware, The Unexplained will continue on the radio. But of course, if anything happens with the show that suggests that it may not continue, I will tell you on my social media, on my Facebook page, on these podcasts, and, you know, in the various portals that I have. But that's all I know for now. And thank you very much for supporting me. My Saturday show came to an end recently, but they tell me that the Sunday show continues, which is good news. So we'll keep plugging away at that. And I will keep you informed on those things, of course. And thank you again for your support. Okay. I don't think I've got anything else to say apart from say thank you very much to Haley for booking the guests on the online show. First up, because we have had a lot of talk about UFOs lately in the light of that report that is about, as I record these words, to be delivered in Washington and which in recent days has been leaked, that suggests that they can not exactly confirm and not exactly deny the existence of aliens or alien craft in our skies. You know, they might be some kind of strange technology from this Earth. They may be from somewhere else. The leaked findings of the report, as we have them at the moment, don't seem to take us any further on. But if you remember, Lou Elizondo, when he appeared on this show recently, said that he felt that the report would be, in many ways, preliminary, and that there would be more to discover. So we'll watch this. But before we get to the main guest on this edition, who was one of Art Bell's stalwarts, and I'm delighted to get on this show, Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, I want you to hear Nick Pope, recorded a couple of days ago for my radio show, and this is just a few minutes of Nick with his reaction to the leaked findings from that report. So this is Nick Pope, ex-Ministry of Defense UFO man.
It's mixed messages, and I think that reflects two things. Firstly, the ongoing confusion about this whole phenomenon within the US government and the associated confusion about how to handle this. And secondly, it reflects this ongoing struggle for control of the narrative that we've talked about before, that there are factions within the US government. And that, yes, this is a leak, but it seems to be reliable. It seems to be multiple sources, senior administration officials. So I don't think much will change between now and the actual report. And as I say, it's mixed messages because on the one hand, it is we have found no hard evidence that any of this is extraterrestrial. On the other hand, it's we have not ruled out the extraterrestrial hypothesis.
Which takes us absolutely nowhere. What was the point of doing this report?
Well, sure. It's like we're right back where we started. And these are exactly the sorts of almost philosophical debates about not being able to prove a negative that we were having at the MOD back in the 90s. So I can only hope that, you know, even though this does seem to reflect what the report will say, that the focus will now move from the report to what action the US government will be taking going forward. And this report should be not the end of the conversation, but the beginning.
Indeed, since, you know, pilots, people with careers on the line here, have gone on the record and said things, they've described the phenomena that they encountered. You know, people have gone out on a limb, they've gone the extra mile. What are they going to make of all of this?
Well, I think some will feel vindicated, but others will feel somewhat stabbed in the back by this, let down by the system. I mean, again, I think it's important to say we need to wait for the actual report to drop. And even when it does, maybe some of the really interesting material, of course, is going to be in the classified annex, not in the unclassified summary that one hopes will be released to the media and the public. But this reflects, I think, wider confusion and debate about this issue in society. And going back to this point of, is the take-home message no aliens, or is the take-home message we haven't ruled out aliens?
And is the take-home message we are continuing to pile resources into understanding this? When you bear in mind that also this week, just to add to the confusion, the new incoming head of NASA says that he and his organization are going to investigate UFOs.
Well, I think that was probably the most interesting statement of all to have been made this week, because historically NASA, you know, and this is somewhat counterintuitive, but have not played the big part in UFO research that one might suppose they had. I mean, historically, of course, programs like Blue Book have been embedded in the Air Force, then ATIP was DIA, and then DOD. So this is a welcome development, because my goodness, after 70 odd years of the military leading on this and the bureaucrats in the DOD, maybe we do need this fresh perspective of science taking a look at this. But yeah, again, I think it all reflects this struggle for control of the narrative that's going on right now. People are making their move, throwing their hat into the ring and saying, yeah, we can do this.
But it also sounds to me, and maybe I'm just an old conspiracy theorist, I never thought that I was, that there is at least a faction here screaming, close this down.
Very much so. Absolutely. And that's exactly, we've seen it before. We've seen it happen. I've seen it happen personally at the Ministry of Defense. But colleagues in the US before my time, but had the same thing happen to them with the Condon report, which effectively pulled the rug out from under their feet and led to the termination of Project Blue Book. So yeah, you are absolutely spot on. There's no conspiracy about it. History shows us that this happens, that the skeptical faction tries to shut things down by often commissioning a report and then getting into that report statements that no evidence has been found that would suggest any overt threat or any extraterrestrial reality. And then they usually play the card of, well, at a time like this, we've got plenty of other things to be spending defense resources on. And that's it.
I spoke to Lou Elizondo this week, finally was able to get to speak to him before this leak came out. And, you know, he's very clear that the work of ATIP, as was, goes on. I wonder if this indicates to us that the work of ATIP, or whatever has replaced and mutated around ATIP, whether that is going to be redoubled, whether that's going to be scaled back. I go back to the point I made at the beginning. It is complete confusion.
It is, and every time you have programs like this embedded in military intelligence, it makes it even more difficult to figure out what's going on. One thing's for sure, nobody's going to stop looking at sightings in their own airspace when pilots are seeing them, radar operators are tracking them, they're being filmed on forward-looking infrared cameras, and where we have satellite data too. So somebody's going to be looking at it, but they may, pun intended, be trying to keep this off the radar by doing what they've done before, doing what they did to get ATIP commissioned in the first place, i.e. dressing it up as about next generation aerospace and weapon threats to the US. And here's the great irony of that. People say, well, ATIP was dressed up like that to hide it from the public and the media. No, it was dressed up like that to hide it from the skeptical faction within the Defense Intelligence Agency and the DOD. That's how they got it through.
So if you want to go into even deeper conspiracy territory, you might say that actually someone somewhere knows what this is, and it isn't quite what you and I might have assumed or, you know, hoped in some cases. It's something else, and we know, but we really want to find a way of sweeping this under the carpet for now, because if you found out what this is, you wouldn't like it.
Well, I think that goes back. I think I'm sure I've recall a meme somewhere. Maybe it's from the Alien and Prometheus movies, but I'm sure I recall a meme along the lines of "It isn't what you think it is," and that ties in with something that I was discussing with Tucker Carlson on Ancient Aliens when I interviewed him. And I think I used the phrase "a secret too terrible to be told," i.e., something that's not just confirmation of an extraterrestrial presence, because that's fine, we could take that. But no, it's something much more dark side.
I'm starting to think that way, and I don't want to. Finally, one of my listeners, Andy Woodall, asked what you meant when you said, and it was recorded, reported rather, in a variety of media. I'm just looking at the Daily Express here. This latest information that was posted, I think it was Jeremy Corbell, the 14 objects swarming around a U.S. naval ship, and you said, or quotes you said in the newspaper, don't forget what people say and what they're quoted as saying in the headline might be a little at variance, but described it as an act of war. What did that mean?
I did say that, and I stand by it, and it has been hugely controversial. I've been accused, as have Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon, of promoting the threat narrative in the media. Actually, it's nothing David Fravor didn't say when he's been interviewed about his encounter with the Tic Tac in relation to the Nimitz incident. But setting that aside, no, I meant it. What I meant was this: anything in our airspace, particularly if it approaches closely to U.S. Assets, aircraft carriers, destroyers, Navy jets, whatever, anything like that should be automatically viewed as a potential threat, and then we can all be relieved if that doesn't materialize, than the other way around, i.e. take the sort of fluffy new age spiritual, oh, it's all fine approach, and then get caught out if a threat suddenly emerges. So yes, an act of war is a provocative statement, and I made that for a reason, to provoke the debate about whether there is a threat or a potential threat. And if you talk to anyone like myself who's looked at this from within government, they'll tell you the same thing on that.
Well, indeed, if I was to fly an F-16 fighter over the Kremlin, assuming I'd get that far without being shot down, which I probably would be, if I was to fly round and round the Kremlin without good reason so to be doing, you know, then that would be regarded as a hostile act. I don't know how you can't view those 14 objects, whatever they were, as anything other than a hostile act.
Exactly, exactly. But I've been accused of still secretly working for the government on this, promoting the threat narrative. I've been accused of taking money from the deep state to pursue their agenda. I've been accused of getting people ready for a false flag alien invasion in which I'm supposedly to play a part as kind of PR spokesperson or something. I mean, it's all nonsense. It's just that when you talk to people who've done this from within government, the military, and the intelligence community, they view it through the lens of threat, because that is our first priority. When I was doing this for the UK, our first priority is to keep the people safe, keep the watchful eye on the UK air defense region, and if there's anything there that shouldn't be there, we need to find out what it is.
Should I bother trying to be first to seek out the findings of the report when it comes out? You know, should I stay up all night to try and see it, or do you think we've now got the strength of it?
I think we've got the gist of it, but I suspect that a whole bunch of people will all be tweeting and scrambling to do interviews at once when it does drop. And of course, when you consider that people like Marco Rubio have been doing interviews on it, I suspect that he'll be among the first to know when this thing does drop, and will be first in front of the camera. But I would watch carefully. June 25th is the deadline date. But now this has been, now the preliminary findings or the headline findings have been briefed. It may drop any time. What I hope, though, is that it will drop in the sense of this is a sort of holding reply report, and we do need to do more work and find out what we're dealing with. Because frankly, saying we don't know, which is arguably another key message here, isn't good enough.
Former MOD UFO man Nick Pope there, now independent investigator in the United States. We will talk more with Nick about this when the report comes out, of course, and we'll see what is said. But bear in mind the words of Lou Elizondo that this may just be preliminary and there may need to be more investigation done. And of course, NASA, just to add to the interest and the excitement, getting involved in its own alien, well, let's not say alien, but UFO investigation. And let's see what that brings with the new boss of NASA, who replaces Jim Bridenstine. Okay, let's get to the main guest now, one of the stalwarts of my listening to Art Bell in the late 90s and the early 2000s, Daryl Sims, the alien hunter. I am delighted to be able to connect with Daryl and to get him on this show. We will have a lot to talk about. This conversation, exclusive to the podcast, and I hope that you enjoy it. Please let me know what you think by going to my website, theunexplained.tv, sending me your thoughts and suggestions through the link for mail on the website, theunexplained.tv. Okay, let's get to the States now. Daryl Sims, alien hunter, is here. Daryl, thank you very much for making time to come on my show.
I'm delighted to be here.
And Daryl, it's a particular pleasure because my background is that I began to hear people like you on air with the great Art Bell. And I know that you did many shows in those nights with Art Bell. And, you know, you were always a perfect combination. Those were very special days, weren't they?
He was a remarkable character, and you fit the mold. He's gone and you're here.
Well, you know, I got to know him towards the end of his life. And I got to understand his concerns, and I got to understand his view of things. And I learned from him, but the one thing that he told me I could do was the one thing that during his lifetime I didn't believe that I could do. And he told me, buddy, you can broadcast live from your home. Okay? Now, I thought I could do podcasts from my home. I did not believe that I could actually go on the radio, which I now do across the United Kingdom, from my home. And I've been doing that and people have been loving it. So, you know, I never got to tell William Arthur Bell that he was right, but he was, Daryl.
Hey, right on target, and you are here.
So just before we move on and talk about the main subjects on the menu here and your work and your life as an alien hunter, quotes, what are your memories of those great Art Bell shows? Because you were such a regular on them.
Well, the biggest thrill I got, I suppose, you comment well about him and he's such a good man, is one night we were on a program and I began to talk to him about intelligence business and actually how it works. And I told him that he ought to vet me. And he said, why should I do that? And I said, because there's going to be a lot of people come on after me here in the 90s. They're going to claim the same thing, top figure clearance and this and that and so on. And that's probably not going to be the case. And I said, so you should vet me for your own good. And he did. I sent him a copy of my top figure clearance and various other documents from the Central Intelligence Agency and so on. And he looked at it and he said, for all you debunkers out there on Daryl Sims, I have news for you. He's the real deal. And he said, best damn investigator I've ever seen. So I put that on my little, on my Chiron with quotes and whatnot. And I just loved it when he said it. It was
well, you know, when he says it, it's been well and truly said. But you do have a great resume, military police officer, former CIA operative. Talk to me about your service then. What sorts of things did you do?
The thing I did, how that really got going, people could spin it a dozen ways, but I just simply like the truth. And the simple truth is, I was in college at New Mexico State University, and I didn't particularly like the educational system. I thought it was a mass information system of dead information. And as long as I could memorize a lot of it, I would be called educated when I graduated. And I didn't think that was an education. So I quit and joined the and joined the United States Army as a volunteer for during the Vietnam War, right in the middle of the heat of it. And that was in 1968. And I went into the basic training at Fort Bliss, and then I went to AIT, that's Advanced Individual Training, that's your school, in other words, in military police school. And while I was there, I was sheep dipped. That's a CIA term, meaning simply they dip into the military looking for exactly what they want. Then they pick and choose out of about 70 of us, and they pick me and several other guys to they invited us to go into their program. They never would tell us who they were. And long story short is I ended up in the Central Intelligence Agency for 2 years, and I was a martial arts instructor and a weapons instructor in the Central Intelligence Agency. I was not a spy. I did do a small amount of spying for the company on some company people that needed to be spying on, but they didn't want their own people to do it because it was an internal problem.
This is going to sound like a strange question, but let's get it done. In the CIA, did you ever come across any evidence, any hints, any suggestions of alien presence? Because we are now told that the security services may have well had their toes and fingers in this for many years.
Well, the answer to your question is yes and no. And I don't mean to be coy here. Simply put, was my involvement in the Central Intelligence Agency involved in UFOs and that sort of thing? No, it was not. Did I do UFO investigations while I was in the Central Intelligence Agency in 1968? Yes. And I was doing abduction research, just like I always have been. And I had, in fact, one of the people that I worked with on abductions was the director of admissions. His daughter at famous William and Mary College was having a visitation events, and it was freaking her completely and totally out. So I worked in those cases, but I kept my interest apart from the CIA. According to my media people, they believe to this day that I was chosen simply because of my UFO knowledge and events and so on. I don't particularly believe that to be true. They do, but I don't, simply because if that were true, they would have already used me in that some capacity there. They did not. I suspect they didn't know how deep involved I was and what I actually knew. But I can say this with great clarity and great authority. They have been spying on my work for years, and I can prove that from an intelligence point of view. My former webmaster was a cryptographer, and it was on Art Bell show of all things. And one night on Art Bell, I dropped a bunch of terms, CIA and intelligence terms, into discussion without Art or anyone knowing about it, just to see if anybody was listening out there.
Gee.
My cryptographer called, he called in the morning, and he was screaming and cussing me out for everything it was worth. And I told him, don't talk trash to me like that. And he said, I want to know what you did. We got 250 hits on the site last night. That's 250 hits. That's pretty good. I'm glad a lot of people are listening. You don't understand. It wasn't 250 hits from people. It was from the intelligence community. He said, three of those hits were NSA computers in the White House. Whatever you think you're doing, stop it. He was furious.
So somebody clearly had a deep interest in what you were doing. But isn't it fascinating that one of the reasons you were hired for the CIA was because they knew you had a bit of a background in these things?
According to my media lady, she thinks that's the case. I still have no evidence of that. I would like to think that was true, but I just don't have any evidence for it. To me, life is real simple. There are things I believe and things I think, and then there are things I can prove. And I like to make the distinctions. And in that particular case, I can say I think some of that may be true, but I can't prove it to be true.
Now, Daryl, before we talk about your work, nearly 40 years, I understand, of it. Probably it is 40 years by now. I think I'm probably reading an old biography here. But before I do that, as you will know, the biggest story in ufology at the moment is this report that they are telling us is going to be delivered on or about the 25th of June, and we've had some leaked findings of it. Unfortunately, it is completely inconclusive and doesn't really, it seems to me, take us any further on than we were before that report was commissioned. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I do. I've told people for a long time what I think about what was going to happen. And, of course, they look at me and say, no, you're against disclosure, you're this. And I said, no, you don't understand. I used to be a part of the intelligence community. This is what we do for a living. And I said, when I first went into the intelligence community and learned the tradecraft, I realized that the aliens function just like we do, that they lie and they lie consistently. Now, the question one has to ask is, why in the world do we need to lie to the American public or anyone else? To me, this is an international issue and it's a world problem. And to me, the whole world ought to be involved, and they should be informed. I don't think the Russians, Chinese, or us should be exclusive in this. I don't believe that at all. I think that's a huge mistake. This is a world problem, and we should all be well aware of what's going on and should accordingly do what we need to do. But the fact is that even my friends, like, I'll give a quick example. Someone called the other night, a friend of mine, you know, they said, well, you know, we thought we'd call you and see what you think of these wonderful films we're seeing on TV. I said, you mean the ones in green with the night vision with a triangular craft mm-hmm. above the ship? And he said, yeah. See, isn't that incredible? I said, the film is 2 years old. What do you mean? I said, you're not listening to me. If you were really paying attention to the real information from Lou Elizondo and others who are in the know, instead of these people who aren't in the know, who are parroting a bunch of stuff, don't have a clue, he would have told you, and he already did tell you, that they're seeing from 1 to 3 of these events a day on the East and West Coast. Why are they showing you film, one of them, 12 years old and 14 years old, and then one of them 2 years old? They could have showed you one from yesterday if they wanted to. I said, so you're missing the real important situation. And I said, in my view, and I said, I'm just telling you the way it is. We lie, and that's cover stories are the name of the game in the intelligence business. And I said, the reason I'm saying this to you is not to give you a downer or anything like that. I'm simply telling you that they've been waiting for you to give a congressional hearing or whatever you think it's going to do the big one for the last 50 years. They've been waiting that long, and you haven't shown up. It's taken you 50 years to figure out that you probably ought to know something. And since then, they've told you it's swamp gas, it's meteorites, it's anything you can imagine, except the truth.
But if they wanted to keep it all under wraps, Daryl, sorry to jump in.
Absolutely.
Why allow any of it to be released? Why allow people to speak?
Well, the problem is it's getting out. Let me put this in perspective, if I may. The individual that called me said, did you see those? That night vision stuff is incredible. And I said, let me put it in perspective for you. You're watching something on TV that's probably 2 years old in grainy night vision. Do you think that the U.S. Navy doesn't have any better equipment than that? What do you mean? I said, I'm very clear about what I mean. I said, let me ask you a question. Would you like to see those same things in color? He said, well, you think they have them in color? I said, I didn't say they did. I said, I asked you, would you like to see them in color? I said, my point to you is they're not the only people looking out there. And the intelligence community is not going to tell you the whole story. I said, but I will, from what I know. And I said, I can assure you that there's a lot of stuff just that you were shown just in that grainy film. You should have asked a million questions. And I said, in my opinion, we're asking the wrong questions.
You're asking, what is it? Is it Chinese? Is it American?
Well, if you can't figure that out, it's flying at hyper supersonic speeds in and out of water, in space, close and around us and beyond us and everything else. And you can't figure out whether it's Chinese or us or swamp gas. You're not even in the ballpark to ask questions. I said, if I see a bus driving down the street in Houston, Texas, all the windows are painted black, I assume somebody's driving the bus. Now, in Houston, it's possible that somebody isn't driving the bus. I've seen some pretty wild bus rides. But my point is that somebody, you need to ask the big questions, or whoever's going to ask the big questions to the intelligence boys, who's driving the bus, the UFO bus? And now if they tell you they don't know and nobody can know and only God knows or whatever, they're not telling you the truth.
So who is driving the bus?
Well, let's go back to Roswell 1947, and you can go back to 1945. There was another UFO crash. There was another one in Corona. There was also one in Mexico. There were several others, but that's enough to get the point across. In every one of those cases, there were bodies. So for someone to sit there and tell me, who's been involved in UFO recoveries, and they're like, we don't know who's driving, we don't know anything, that's not true. The mere fact that you put out a report that says, we have a flying saucer, 1947, and there's these bodies, and then all of a sudden you say you didn't, that didn't happen, we're not really sure, we don't know what we're talking about, that's not true. You've already made a mistake in your cover story. So we know there were bodies in these individual crashes. So somebody was driving the bus, so to speak. And so does the intelligence community know anything more about who was flying those craft? They know they're not us. They know that for sure. And they know more than that, but they're not going to tell you that.
Of course, if you look at the leaks from the report, they're not saying that, are they? They're saying we're not sure what they might be.
That the important thing is to keep you off center. Center is who's driving the bus. What they've got you looking at is the bus.
So why would they want to put up a subterfuge like this then? What is it that you think is being covered up?
Well, I think, number one, Roswell happened in
1947.
And the remarkable thing about that particular event is that nobody... Everybody changed their mind all of a sudden. Said no, it didn't. It was a water. It was a balloon. And you know, those are just cover stories. They're a lie. A cover story is simply a lie that's told as an absolute truth to make you believe that it's true. And if it works, then they don't have to tell any more lies. That's good. That's sufficient. That's good enough. And that's unfortunately the way it works. And it's a heartbreaker for me to tell people that, but the fact is that they're not going to tell you the truth. And when the big report comes out, they're going to focus it right back on the bus again. Well, the bus did this and it did that, and we don't really know how that happens. And we're wondering if it could be a glitch in some of our equipment. No, it's not a glitch in your equipment. Some of these things have actually hit submarines underwater. There's a whole report on that. Some of them have hit aircraft. One of them landed in Mexico City, the commercial aircraft landed with the front end of it caved in where something hit it, and it wasn't a meteorite.
So you think, essentially, just to boil this down, and then I promise we will talk about your life and work, you think that they're basically just keeping it all cloudy? This is just the 2021 way of keeping it all muddy, just as it was in 1947 when they said, weather balloons, nothing to see.
That's exactly right. If they can keep the narrative on something as simple as the bus, or it wasn't
really amazing. We can't figure out what that is. That could be an inversion of light. This could be this.
Could be, but it isn't. And they know better than that. It's like when they went to Mars, and they showed the face on Mars. A friend of mine in the intelligence community called me and said it took them several years to go back to Mars and refilm the face on Mars, and it's grainier than it was when they were further out in space. He laughed and said, do you think for a minute that the special satellites we have can't see a rock the size of your fist from 2,500 miles up? And I said, that's not even classified. And he said, that's correct. So obviously somebody's not telling us the truth, and they're doing it for a reason.
What's the reason?
I get it. Well, one of the big problems with Mars is that there's been a nuclear war on that planet. Somebody nuked the planet. Now you say, well, that's all a conspiracy. No, actually it's not. One of the people who noticed this first was not a UFO guy. It was a NASA scientist. And he told everybody, he was a specialist in nuclear, after nuclear explosions. And he was noticing a lot of the debris and things laying around different places around Mars. And he told everybody, he says, gentlemen, this is amazing. They said, what do you mean? He said, this is the result of there's been a nuclear war here on this planet. And they're like, why don't you write a paper on it? So he did. But my point is that he also, again, I can't, this stuff is available. He made a statement that was astounding one day. He said, everybody's looking for the alien. And I laughed and I said, well, I said, they're from the neighborhood. They are. And anyway, he writes a paper and then later wrote a book called Ringmakers of Saturn. Now, you can pay about $300 or $400 for the book, or you can Google it for free. It's called Ringmakers of Saturn, and the author is a NASA scientist. He's now deceased. But the wonderful thing about this man is he says they're parked right there in the rings of Saturn. And I got to looking closely, and I noticed one of them was the Cassini ring. Now, the reason that's significant is because I was invited to the JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab, me and one of my doctors. Now, this is weird. They know who I am, and they know what I do.
So why are they inviting you there?
And they invited me. That's a good question. And after this, in great meeting, it was the meeting was about the Cassini device they were going to send up to Saturn area, and they were going to it's the first nuclear package missile with tech on it they were going to send to that area. And at the end of that presentation, they asked, were there any questions? And I stood up and everybody got quiet because nobody knew who I was in that room except for a few people. And they probably wished they hadn't invited me at this point. And I said, you guys are the interesting, the JPL sent, you make all these modular craft that rove around on Mars and different things. And then after all that's done, the research, then we send a manned craft. That's what NASA does. I said, you guys went to the moon, had all your rovers and things up there. Then we sent manned operation to the moon. Then we went to Mars. We got rovers up on Mars. All of a sudden, you took a left turn, left Mars, and you aimed the first nuclear package missile toward the toward Saturn in the Jovian system. I said, what did you find in Saturn that made you take a left turn from Mars? I'm telling you, you could have heard a pin drop in that building. There must have been hundreds and hundreds of scientists in that room, and no one said a word. And all of a sudden, the guy says, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, free drinks and gifts for everyone in the back, and thank you for coming here tonight. And that was the way the meeting ended. But the fact is, one of the rings that where the scientist, Norm Bergstrom, the one who wrote the book, Ringmakers of Saturn, he says they, the alien, quote unquote, are parked in the rings of Saturn. If you look at the rings carefully, you'll find one of the rings is the name of the project of the missile that was fired up there, which is called the Cassini Project. And guess where they're parked? And the Cassini ring.
So you believe the answer to all of the questions is parked in the rings of Saturn, and if we were to look there a little more closely, which you say we're not going to, we would discover that we are indeed not alone.
The wonderful thing is that you can actually do this with, you can rent telescopes and do things. Some people have scopes big enough to do it, but you can see that there's something else going on in the ring of Saturn. And my best advice to your audience is to simply download the book, Ringmakers of Saturn, and you're going to get a real thrill. And you're going to say, oh my gosh, they're not from Zeta Reticuli. They're not from millions of light years out there. They're from the neighborhood, and they're parked there.
Okay. So you're saying that the American government, our government, all the governments actually are complicit in this. They know that this is going on. They know that there's some kind of power, and that power has been responsible for a war on Mars, or, you know, a nuclear attack bombing on Mars, and their craft are parked in the rings of Saturn, and this is the big secret. So what is all of this dance that's been played with us over the years, with craft appearing and people reporting UFO sightings and all the rest of it? Who's playing fast and loose with us?
The difficulty is that the majority of the people in the intelligence community are so involved in the compartmentalizing their information that a lot of them don't even know what each other has. And for instance, in the United States alone, we've got 17 different levels of intelligence community. And some of the stuff they have is simply not known to other people in the other areas of the intelligence community. So for various reasons, some good, some bad, they have their own situations in which they will allow information, in part at least, to be shared based on a need-to-know basis. And as far as the United States, the public is concerned, you don't need to know. All you need to know is there's a bus out there, and we're trying to figure it out. And maybe in 10 years, we'll get back with you on it.
Meantime, you're saying that there is a race that has got craft parked in the rings of Saturn. They're visiting here freely. We know they are. You know, it kind of brings me back to that question of why are they leading us a merry dance here? Why don't they just come out and say, hi, we're your neighbors from Saturn, and forget about your government. We're the big dudes in town.
Well, there again, that opens up another huge can of worms, and thank you for doing that. And that can of worms, in my opinion, goes back to when people ask me the question, exactly who is the alien? I said, well, they will never tell you who they are, nor where they really come from. They'll always say the Pleiades or the Zeta Reticuli, some place that you can never possibly get to or see or understand. And the interesting thing is that these entities, we have needed another 3 hours for me to explain this in detail to make it coherent to the audience how I actually know this. But the best answer I can give you in general is when I was 4 years old, the entities came in my room. That's how I got into this whole subject. It wasn't by choice, wasn't by anything other than it was in my room. And long story short is I sat up in bed. I noticed he was in the room. He was walking away, and I thought he's going to bump into the wall. I didn't know he had just came through the wall and brought me with him. And when he turned around, he heard me thinking he's going to bump into the wall. Who is he? And amazingly, he turned around, and for the first time in my life, I heard a voice in my head. And it wasn't me like talking like now. It was him talking, and he was in my head, and he said, it's awake. And I was the only other person in that room. He wasn't talking about himself.
So you were the it.
So that was the it. So the issue is that when he turned around and I looked at him, of course, little children notice things that adults don't know, that adults have probably been in awe or worshiping him or whatever. I just want to know why he didn't have any clothes on. It's wintertime. It's freezing. But I've got my covers on me, and I'm freezing still.
So what did he look like?
And I can't figure out. He was very skinny. He looked like practically a stick figure, mm-hmm. Very skinny with a large bulbous head, pure white, not gray, but pure white, with round eyes that were solid black, and they were the best way to describe them, an inch and a half across, and they were, the whole thing was just profound to me. I couldn't get it because none of that made sense. He didn't have any clothes on, and I'm looking at him like, this is impossible. I look down and notice he didn't have any belly button. I mean, a kid would know that right off the bat. And the second thing I noticed, he didn't have a TT. Mm. By that, I mean, he had no genitalia. Well, as a kid, I couldn't understand. None of that made any sense to me. Everybody has that stuff. When I got to thinking about this, I realized if you don't have a belly button, you weren't born. You were hatched. This is really important. Hatched, cloned, made, or manufactured.
So you think this was some kind of hybrid, automaton, something not analogous to humanity?
In effect, yes. What we have seen, realistically, is you have to look at the whole alien phenomena by asking the right questions. If we don't, then again, we're going to be hurting. If we keep talking about the bus and not about who's driving it, then you're going to miss the whole point.
All right, and so, in common with a lot of people who've had so-called contact experiences, contactees and abductees, those people say sometimes that they are abducted serially, they are contacted serially through their lives. Is that the case with you?
It was for about 10 events from age 4 to age 17. For 13 years, I had serial events about every year or two and a year and a half. And then the remarkable part of that was in my last event at age 17. It ended violently, and the entities that came in that particular event were not the alien. They were, in my opinion, those who hatched, cloned, made, or manufactured them. The aliens that we see, if you look at the little gray guy, he's got an IQ of about 80. And you help him get your clothes on backwards or inside out. That's how people know they've been taken. They know how to put their clothes on. He doesn't. And the second one is he takes you to a guy that looks just like him, but taller and bigger. He's got an IQ about 140. He's a lot smarter. And he's often referred to as the doctor. Then there's a praying mantis type being. And I got to looking at all these entities, these seven flavors of entities, and I realized, what we're looking at here are models. They're not races at all. They never have been races. We have assumed, and they love it when you do that. They love it because you assume incorrectly. You assume they have to be races because there's at the universe, how it is. What if somebody out there bigger than them made, hatched, cloned, manufactured them for the purpose of making interaction with human beings through them to make you think they're aliens from other planets, when the fact is, they're not.
And in these 10 experiences, encounters, they must have told you something about what they wanted with you.
They actually don't, for the most part. They try not to answer questions, and if they do answer your questions, it's usually nebulous, off the charts, dumb stuff, like you're in the school of higher consciousness and so on, which means you're abducted and they don't want you to figure it out what's going on. But the wonderful thing is, as a 4-year-old child, he tried to make me think that he was, before he left, he wanted me to see him as a bad dream. And he made the image of himself into that of a clown. Now, he didn't shapeshift into a clown. He made my brain think he was a clown and I'd had a bad dream, and that's what this was all about. But I shook my little head back and forth, no, 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 and he never could make me believe it. But now a lot of abductees and contactees have phobias of clowns, and they don't know why.
Wow. What did you tell people through the years?
I kept my mouth shut for a long time. I started doing my investigative work, like I said, in the 60s. I had a lot of, I thought, well, there's got to be other people who've had these experiences too. I couldn't be the only one. And I didn't join UFO organizations or anything like that. I did my own research, developed my own statistics, and boy, we came up with some amazing statistics on abductees. Like, as an example, 45% of these people are Native American, Indian, Irish, Celtic. 64% have low blood pressure. 54% have nosebleeds for no known reason. 27% report altered neurotransmitters and or electrolytes. 68% crave salt. 63% later in life develop night blindness or xerostomia, and nobody knows why. 3% have unusual growth patterns. My senior investigator grew 14 inches in 1 year.
14?
Unbelievable. His parents couldn't keep him in clothes.
You know, sometimes kids shoot up, but I've never heard of 14 inches growth. That's astonishing. So what are you saying? You're saying those statistics prove that various kinds of experiments are being done?
Well, it shows us that the alien is not... They're not telling us the truth. They do things, and we don't know why. For instance, one of the stats is just astounding, and if you tell your dentist this, he'll call you a liar. I told him that I had that a lot of people I knew in a particular area had allergic reactions to procaines, lidocaine, xylocaine, novocaine, and so on. Mm-hmm. And they'll just laugh at you and say, that's a bunch of bull. The allergic reactions to novocaine or procaines in general is so rare they don't even test you for it. It's that rare. And if you go to UFO meetings and ask how many of you people have allergic reactions to novocaine, lidocaine, xylocaine, novocaine, carbocaine, and it's amazing, you'll get 6 or 8 hands that go up in a meeting of 200 or 300 people. And I'll tell them there should be 35,000 to 40,000 people present for that to be true. It's equivalent to 3 out of every people you choose for the astronaut program, 3 out of every 10 are going to have a rare drug allergy to procaines. It just isn't going to happen. There is no actuarial for that. So the question is, what are they doing to this that causes us to have these reactions to procaines?
So we are some intelligence's great experiment, you believe?
Well, I think that's fair to say. They are doing whatever they're doing, and they're not going to tell us what, why, or anything else. They just won't. They don't have to. And like people always tell me that, they're light years ahead of us. And I said, that's not true. Oh, but it is. And I said, you got a case, make it. They got flying craft or look at them. They're amazing. I said, you're not answering my question. You're not being critical in your own thinking. Many of these beings have 3 fingers or 4 fingers with no opposing thumb. How do you suppose you build anything without an opposing thumb? And you get this crickets like in their memory and in their voice because they can't respond to that. And they're like stunned, like, but they have these craft. I said, I have a house that's full of electricity too. I can flip the switch. And if I brought a caveman into my house, he'd think I had a little miniature sun in my living room. And I can flip a switch and control things with my mind. The fact is, he doesn't know anything about electricity, and neither do I. But he thinks I do. He thinks I'm an absolute genius from another planet because I can turn lights on just by movement of my hand. I can clap them, turn them on or off. Wow. You have to be a superior being from another world to do that, don't you?
Okay, so you think that whatever it is not very smart. And would that explain why this seems to have been such a long, ongoing program? I mean, I would have thought that if they were gathering data on us, if they were gathering information about the human species, the human race, they'd have got it by now.
That's absolutely true. When you talk to any geneticist, talk to Jacques Vallée is a good example. As a computer scientist, he will tell you as fast as I will that these beings, a lot of what they're doing has nothing to do with what you think it is. Their so-called genetic program is a joke. You can take 2 or 3 top genetic scientists with you on a team to Mars, quote unquote. Let's assume they have a planet of people there. They don't, but let's assume they did. You could take several scientists within a short period of time. You could figure out the genetics of the whole planet. Why do they need to do hundreds of genetic tests on people? That's not what they're looking for. That's not it at all. And a number of these so-called medical procedures they do on us is a red herring. It's designed to keep you off track of what they're really up to.
So do we have an idea what they're really up to?
Well, we have some clues, and the only way we can go about that is to follow some of the things they're doing, such as one of the things I've done is done 27 surgical interventions on people who claim alien contact and that they may have left a device or something, an implant inside them.
Alien implants, and I believe you've been as far afield as India to do that.
That is correct, sir. We did two surgeries just recently, but the point being that looking at the information concerning the so-called implants, you learn a great deal. And I wrote a book about it, and the book will give you a good thumbnail of it. But the real issue, in my view, is the fact that people don't have a clue what implants are or other things like this. And one of the real problems in the UFO community, and I'll underscore it again, it's like us looking at a little device that's flying around that they've got on radar, and they say, look at this, look at this, look at that. All they're telling you to do is look at the bus. You're not asking the question, who's driving the bus? Same thing with implants. When I first knew about them was when I was 12 years old, because I was the recipient of one at age 12 in 1960.
You still got it?
I do not. They came and retrieved it. But I do have a lot of others from other events. Mm-hmm. But as I look at the phenomena, I realize that the alien lies, and they often do this. They practice subterfuge a great deal and lead us astray, give us red herrings, and spoon feed us if we get reasonably close to anything. They'll spoon feed you and give you, again, red herrings that make you think you're brilliant, you're smart, and you got it all together. And the fact is, you still don't have a clue because you bit the bait, so to speak, like a fish. Now you're caught. You're on their hook. So when we look at implants as an example, the very first thing people tell me, well, these are transponders. I said, you are now looking at something, an alien program, and ascribing human technology or human thinking about it. What makes you think you're even remotely close?
Okay, but they're not putting them in. If they are putting them into people, whatever they might be, they're not for nothing, are they?
That is true. The purpose of some of these devices is to extract or to implant information to some particular people. And implants are very rare. They really are. Just because you've had a UFO event does not mean you've been implanted. In fact, most people have never been implanted, although they all think they have. But the fact is, if you've had any contact with a ship or with the entity, period, you already have been programmed. You don't need an implant. You're already part of the program and don't get it.
You say that you have some of these implants. You have some of these devices. And that you actually carry them around with you? Talk to me about that.
Certainly. I have numerous objects. One of them is an ocular implant. It came from a lady's eye. We think it was attached to a nerve in her eye. And later, when they removed the device inside the little implant casing, we have the casing itself, we think it housed a biological camera.
How did you manage to take something from somebody's eye without impairing their sight?
This was a remarkable incident. There was a double mass abduction, December 8th and December 11th, 1992. And in that mass abduction, a lady on the December 8th was implanted with this ocular device in her eye, in the corner of her eye somehow. And on the December the 11th, three nights later, we think they used that as an ocular device to spy on us for the three-day period. And she was rubbing her eye the next morning after they returned her, and her boss was at work, and she says, "What's wrong with your eye?" And she says, "Well, it there's like a grain of sand or something in my eye. It's been bothering me all night." And she scrubbed her eye and went on, and something fell out of her eye and landed on the desk, and her boss said it made a definitive clink as if it were ceramic or hard. And she said she looked at it, and the abductee tried to sweep it off in the carpet. And she says, it's just a grain of sand. She says, no, leave it alone. I want you to take this to that investigator friend of yours, Mr. Sims, and show him this. And if I call him and he says you didn't bring it to him, I'm firing you from your work. And she said, I'll take it to him. So she put it in a container and she brought it to me. That's the only reason we actually got it.
So why aren't you appearing on television telling the world that you have these things that, I mean, the people who have looked at so-called alien implants say sometimes they're made of strange alloys and materials that we don't really understand. I'm presuming that's the case with these things. Maybe a big presumption. Why aren't you appearing on television in newspapers saying, I've got this collection, including this ocular implant. This stuff is clearly otherworldly, and this is part of the truth. How come that's not happening?
Let's just say that it might happen in the very near future, and that's our goal.
And when you say very near future, a year?
Maybe a little less.
Okay, well, now that's intriguing. How many of these things have you got, Daryl?
It's safe to say that all the objects we remove are not alien implants. They are believed to be that by the person involved, and sometimes these people make mistakes. They don't realize they got shot when they were a kid with a little BB gun, and the little BB is still in there. And then they've had an alien abduction. They said, see there? There's an object right there in my hand. It's an alien implant.
But you think some of them are the real deal?
No question. We've had some of them studied by Los Alamos, New Mexico Tech, Stanford University, and other universities, and there's no question as to their otherworldness, so to speak.
And what do the experts say?
Generally speaking, for the most part, we don't tell them what they're looking at. We don't want them to know. We just want the science. Because in one case where it was a double-blinded study, and they received the objects in a $22,000 implant study, and all they knew, it was just rare metals. We don't know what it was. And anyway, they determined it was from a rare meteorite from the Windbandstätten or the Yaoxiong meteorite, little needle-like projections about a quarter inch long. They were just stunned. They had special microscopes set up to analyze it and check it, and they did a qualitative and quantitative analysis on New Mexico Tech and Los Alamos labs, and they were just stunned. Then they gave their final report, and then unfortunately one of our doctors, kind of like in the government, sneaking around, you know, wanting to get their name in the paper, so he called up there and told them that, what did you find out about the object? He said, who the heck are you? Because no one's supposed to be knowing this. And he calls up and says, well, that's an alien implant. Can you imagine telling someone at New Mexico Tech or Los Alamos, two of these high-class labs, they're looking at an alien implant? Well, needless to say, they ran for cover. They called him nuts and so on, and he said, I'm the one the doctors removed it. And anyway, the good thing is I got the initial report before he called, and then I got the amended report they made after he called. They tried to cover the rear end, so to speak. I don't want anybody to know anything. I just want to know the science. Then we'll put this stuff together, and then that's the information. Otherwise, if you've got people in the science field who want to cover their rear ends, and they think that's alien-related in any way, shape, or form, they're going to poo-poo it or do other things to keep themselves out of the limelight.
So you have an event planned at which you will unveil some of this material and say whatever the reports have said about, we're not sure what the craft that have been reported are, we don't know whether it's our technology or alien technology, I've got something here that is going to prove to you that we are not alone and something from somewhere else is interacting with us. That's what you're going to do.
I think that would be safe to say. Ultimately, there were three independent, to take this out of the government's hand for a second, I have three pieces of material. One is from the famous Bob White UFO. He saw a UFO with his secretary. It expelled some hot molten metal, And he got it, put it in his trunk of his car. This was like 60, 70 years ago. And I've got a small sample of that. It shows it's been studied by laboratories. It shows to be extraterrestrial in origin and all that. Then we have another person, Ben Foggan, about 20 years later. He, his wife, and children were out in the front yard, and a UFO comes over their house and drops some metal out of the back of that UFO, lands on their driveway. Again, very hot, but fairly cool to the touch very quickly, kind of like a shuttle tile is the same way. It glows red hot, but you can touch it, and it's warm, but it will not burn you. And then I have a third piece of material. That one was also extraterrestrial in origin, almost identical to the one 20 years before. And then I have a guy that called me this year and gave me a large piece of metal and said I can have 20% of it. And I cut it after examining it and did all these other things. And he sent me two short videos of the UFO that apparently dropped this metal out of it. And so I'm real happy with that. I'm going to study that one. It looks almost identical to the second expelled metal. And I suspect it's going to tell us the same thing as the other two, they're extraterrestrial in origin.
It's an awful lot of work to compile these things, to get these things together, and to meet people who say that they've had contact experiences. What are you going to do with all of that work then? Is that going to be part of this big presentation that you're going to give to the world? Here's the material, here are the stories, here's the truth.
That is the rumor. Since I'm currently engaged with some media work, I'm not at liberty to even discuss it. My plans are very much like your plans.
All right. Well, I will await whatever happens, Daryl. And thank you for this introduction to you and your work. And I wish you well. I'd love to see some of this material for myself. And I think the world, if you have this material and you have these stories and they are ready to go, I think in a way you kind of owe it to the world.
I think so. I think it's incumbent upon me, the intelligence community, and everybody else. When you come into something that is beyond and bigger than and other than us, it belongs to the whole world. We all need to be making decisions about what this is and how it's going to interact or not interact with us one way or another. It belongs to all of us.
All right. Well, I'm awaiting your presentation. If people want to further check out your work, Daryl, I know that you have a presence online. What is that presence?
Our presence is actually grown in leaps and bounds in the last few days. So anybody that goes to my site, thealienhunter.com, thealienhunter.com, you're going to get a whole bunch of surprises. So a lot of great stuff there for you to read, to be updated on, the latest military intelligence information, and a lot of fun stuff coming up. So there's a wonderful video there that I have. People say, which book should I get? I said, you can do whatever you want to. I'm not here to sell you anything. But if you want to be extremely entertained, that video I've got is remarkable because it's got the only picture I know of that has an alien on it that was filmed by the city of Los Angeles. One of my abductees ran a red light. Mm-hmm. And it snapped a shot of him because they send you a bill for like $300. And it shows an alien in the back seat.
Oh, my God. So this
thank
presence.
You, Los Angeles.
You see?
All of that's on there. And a bunch of the.
All the taxes are worth it.
Stuff is on that film. It's a wonderful video.
All those taxes are worth it. Daryl, thank you very much. We will talk again. And nice to, nice to meet you after all of these years.
Well, it was a pleasure to meet the real Howard Hughes.
Yes, I'm a pale imitation. Daryl, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
The remarkable Daryl Sims, and before him, Nick Pope, on the latest State of Play, to do with that big report that, as I record these words, is imminently, they tell us, to be delivered in Washington. We'll see what it says and whether it takes us any further, or whether we have to watch and wait even more, as I suspect we will. More great guests in the pipeline here on the online home of The Unexplained. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. Please, whatever you do, wherever you are, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.